Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mealer here, and today we welcome Matt Kostelnik to the show. He is the senior horticulturist at Ambius in Des Plaines and has over 20 years of combined experience in the horticulture industry and teaching horticulture at the university level. So as we talk with Matt, I hope you'll join in. Are you having problems with your indoor plants? Do you need help selecting plants for your home? Join in with your comments and questions. Give a call at 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. And Matt Kostelnik, welcome. Great to have you with us today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Well, you know, on Garden Talk last week, we talked about the importance of green spaces. And I think that's pretty important to the company you work for as well. Tell us about Ambius.
Yes, Ambius is a company that focuses on plants inside of buildings. So obviously, you know, you go, you know, outside, that's where most plants are. But what we do is we bring plants on the inside of buildings, and many of those plants happen to be tropical plants, plants that we put there and we hope to keep there for many, many years, foliage plants. And we also do plants that don't stay there as long, blooming plants like poinsettias this time of the year. So you'll see both foliage plants indoors and blooming plants. And we also, speaking of the holidays, we do holiday decorations. So we bring in Christmas trees and wreaths and garland and things like that. And we also do green walls. And we put these in places like office buildings and shopping malls, hotels, airports, any indoor space we can bring plants into. That's what my company Ambius focuses on.
And what do you do as a senior horticulturist? What are your major responsibilities?
I'm mainly involved when, for example, if we have indoor plants, like let's say there's a tree inside of a building and it's struggling, and our frontline colleagues need assistance in figuring out what may be going wrong. As an example, I put together a lot of training for our colleagues. So we are throughout all of North America. And every month, as an example, I put together about an hour training video on taking care of indoor plants. So I'm there to help train and also troubleshoot any issues that our colleagues may be facing with the plants inside of buildings.
How do you think plants affect indoor spaces?
I think the biggest way they affect indoor places is the effect they have on people in terms of especially in the wintertime. I'm in Chicago, places like Wisconsin. You're outside, you come inside of a building, and when you see plants inside of a building, it helps you connect with nature again. And I think it is a warming effect. It has an inviting effect, and it just ultimately keeps people connected with nature. And we spend a lot of time inside of buildings, a great deal of time inside of buildings. And just having something to connect with nature, even if it's things like running water, even pictures of plants, stuff that helps keep us connected to nature, I think is a really good effect on our well-being and our levels of stress and just making us want to stay inside of those locations for longer periods of time.
Yeah, I think there's probably some pretty good research on everything you've talked about that really does make a difference.
Yes. And one term they use a lot is it's a term called biophilia, and it's basically just people's need for nature. And do we function better when we have a connection with nature? And a lot of people would argue that we do. You know, for example, you take a walk in the park, or even if you are inside of a building and you have a window that overlooks a park, you know, something like Central Park as an example, that has an effect on people. And there actually is research on, you know, absenteeism at work, you know, people wanting to be inside of a building or not wanting to be inside of a building based upon what's in that building or not in that building. And it's not just plants. There are other things too that make people want to stay in a building or the opposite, want to leave that building and get out.
Well, I think if most homeowners, myself included, like to have some plants in their own homes. And let's talk about things you need to consider when bringing a plant into your home.
Yes, I would say probably the biggest thing to consider is light with indoor plants. Before I joined the indoor plant business, I really kind of took light for granted because, you know, outside, hey, it's either shade or part shade or sun, and that's about it. I've worked in greenhouses, you know, never even thought about light, you know, because it was just always available. It was totally, you know, it was abundant. But when I started taking care of plants indoors and especially places like office buildings and shopping malls and places like that, I realized that light is very, very low indoors. And a good way to tell that is you never have to wear sunglasses inside of a building. You go outside, even if it's a cloudy day, a lot of times they still wear sunglasses because there's a tremendous amount of light out there. So I would say light is the number one thing. And in general, the more light you have, in general, the better that is. You will see plants do some really amazing things. For example, if you have a south-facing window. Another thing to consider, of course, is the space that that plant is going to take up. Is it going to be a plant that's rather tall? Is it a plant that, you know, may outgrow its location eventually? How much space do you actually have in that environment? And I think a third factor is how much effort do you want to put into taking care of that plant? There are some plants that need to be watered more often than others. There are some plants that will tolerate kind of harsher conditions than others. And, some people may not want to put a great deal of time into taking care of a plant, or they may not be able to. They may be gone, or, you know, just, you know, what level of input do you want to have? And there's other people that may want to, you know, deal with their plants every single day. So there's kind of plants for each individual scenario out there.
Yeah, and when you're talking about plants for hard conditions, are there some that you think about when, you know, okay, here's a plant that I could, you know, we've got some tough conditions here. Here's a plant that I could have.
Yes. Yeah, there are a number of plants that do well. There's no plant that requires no care or no light. But there certainly are some plants that will do pretty well and tolerate those conditions. Do you want a few examples?
Yeah.
Okay. One I would consider, there's a number of them, but one plant's called a ZZ plant. ZZ plant, that's the common name, just two Z's. And that is a plant that doesn't have to be watered that often. It's a low water plant, and it's a plant that tolerates lower light conditions. Another example would be aglaonema. That's sometimes called a Chinese evergreen plant, tolerates lower light conditions and does not need to be watered that often. And a third one, this is a really good one. It's pretty easy to get. It's called Sansevieria. I almost hesitate to say its common name. Sometimes people call it snake plant or mother-in-law tongue. But that's a very, very good plant that does not require much care and does not require much light.
The ZZ plant, I can't think of what it looks like.
It is a newer plant to the house plant collection. It hasn't been around forever. In fact, I think it was introduced in probably sometime in the 90s, I guess. It didn't really start becoming popular until about 10 or 15 years ago. It has like spikes that go up, and then there's little leaflets on it. And I don't know what exactly to compare it to, but a lot of times you will see them for sale anytime you go to a garden center. I don't know exactly. It just looks very different, and the leaves are kind of waxy. And sometimes you'll actually see these things. They look like little potatoes at the bottom of the ZZ plant. And they actually are. They're tubers. They're like little potatoes. And those are nice because it holds on to a lot of water. And that the plant doesn't, you know, constantly need to be watered all the time. And also in those potatoes, there's a little food in there for that plant. But it's a very unique looking plant, very different plant.
I'm going to have to look that one up because I just don't remember it. Well, you mentioned light, of course, as probably the first thing to consider. What about humidity? At this time of the year, humidity levels tend to go down in homes. And so what's the best way to boost humidity around your plants?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And you're absolutely right. At this time of the year, humidity gets very low. And the best advice I can give for that is, one is the type of plant that you have. So some of the plants that I had mentioned, plants that have thicker, waxier leaves, they tend to deal with that lower humidity better. For the plants that don't deal, the plants that do not like low humidity, dry air, are plants that typically have softer leaves, things like ferns. And some things you can do, one is you can group plants together closer. And when you do that, when plants are always releasing water vapor into the air, which is humidity, and they release that. And when you kind of put them together, it will kind of raise the humidity a little bit around those plants. Not a great deal, but it will raise it up. Sometimes people ask about misting. Misting does raise the humidity, but only for, you know, once that water evaporates, it's no longer humid. So it may only last, you know, 10 minutes or 20 minutes, whatever might be the case. There's two other things you can do. One is sometimes people will put a baking sheet, and they'll put rocks or some sort of, you know, porous clay or whatever in that sheet, and they'll put water in it, and that water will evaporate off of those rocks, and it'll release some humidity that way. And the final thing you can do is I actually have a humidifier.
Yeah, near the plants.
Right.
Ron Kostelnik. I had Ron Kostelnik on my mind as a former Green Bay Packer, and Matt's not related to him, so I'll mention that right off the bat. Matt Kostelnik is who we're talking with, senior horticulturist at Ambius in Des Plaines, Illinois. Great to have him with us. We'll take your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a question from Perry in Fort Atkinson. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I brought a smaller hibiscus plant into the house to finish watching it blossom, but on the buds, there's little black spots. How do I get rid of those?
So you just brought this in and it has these little black spots?
Well, yeah.
Okay. Was it like that when it was outside or just developed that as soon as you brought it inside?
Since I brought it inside, I've noticed it. So I'm wondering if I have spider mites or something?
Yeah. Spider mites generally aren't black. So it doesn't sound like spider mites to me. It's still possible. Are they moving around?
No, but if I take a spray bottle of water, I can get them off of it. But it's just really a nuisance.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say if the spray bottle is working, you know, it. I don't know if it's, you know, what exactly is developing on there. But if that's working, I would go ahead and do that. And it sounds like it's related to them from coming outside to the inside.
Yeah.
And maybe they're able to live in that inside environment, but they weren't able to make it outside.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I guess you're going to have to wash them off and see what happens. Maybe stick the whole plant in the shower. Do it that way if you want to get it done quickly. Oh, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Matt Kostelnik, our guest today. Our producers, Jill Nadeau, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Matt Kostelnik, our guest today, senior horticulturist at Ambius, over 20 years of experience in the horticulture industry. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us for Garden Talk today. Join in at 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Karen in Watertown next. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I get these little pellets at Menards all the time. And when they finally are finished and pretty much down to just water clear things, because I just keep rinsing them out. I'm wondering if these can be put in plant soil. of course, fill with water, and then they slowly die out so that when you water the plant again, then they soak up the water and water help water. Does that make sense?
Does that make sense to you, Matt?
I think so. Is that something that's to be added to the soil to help to help hold on to the water?
Well, they're not. I didn't originally purchase that with them that way. They come in Menards in these containers, and they have scents like cinnamon. And after a while, they wear out. And I don't even know how to dispose of them, so I'm not buying them anymore. But I'm also not throwing them out. They only hold, at this point, no scent but water. And I wondered if these little things could be used in soil.
Good question. I don't know exactly what the product is, but it sounds like something that people do actually use. There is a product that can be added to the soil, and it's just like you were saying, they're little pellets. And then when water goes into the soil, those pellets soak up a lot of that water and they expand. And they feel a little bit like Jell-O almost.
Uh-huh.
Is that kind of what you're referring to?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. There's even a drink using them.
Okay. I suppose it wouldn't hurt anything to give that a try to see if it'll hold on to some of the water.
I don't know why not. I mean, we're experimenters, gardeners are. And so, Karen, experiment with that a little bit. I think it could work for sure. Thank you for calling. Nancy in Madison, we'll go to you now. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Yeah. I've got a 3-year-old poinsettia, and it's kind of mean to it over the summer, and I ripped a couple arms off and rooted them and stuck them in some potting soil after I rooted them. But, you know, they're not really growing very much. I was wondering if poinsettias require something other than regular nice potting soil because they are a desert plant. Maybe they need something that's more drained.
That's a good question. What type of soil are you using, houseplant potting soil, or are you using like real outdoor soil?
No, houseplant.
Okay. Well, that's fine. To use that regular, because when they grow those in greenhouses, that's what they're using. They're using typically a peat moss based soil. So I would just keep using that. And as far as growing them out, it is a little different. Where are you growing it? Are you growing it in a window or?
Yeah, it's a south-facing window.
Okay. And when that plant, what is it doing? Is it just kind of growing straight up and not really branching out?
Yeah, well, there's a shorter one that's I think will do better, but the other one is more of an arm and isn't really growing any new branches yet. But, like, the leaves are incredibly small. And, you know, the ones we get from, like, you guys, they're, like, 4-inch leaves, so I don't know what they do to them, if they over-fertilize them.
Yeah, great question. When they grow poinsettias, they do fertilize quite heavily. I used to grow poinsettias in greenhouses, and just as an example, this is kind of a big math number. They would fertilize at 300 to 400 parts per million nitrogen, which is about as heavy as you can feed, you know, an indoor plant. So I would say one is make sure that you are fertilizing at the highest, like if you know you get a houseplant fertilizer. I would use the highest rate for houseplants. On fertilizers, you'll see two different rates typically. You'll see one for outside and you'll see one for inside. And the outside rate is for outdoor plants. They will use a large amount of fertilizer. Indoor plants, not as much, but poinsettias, as they're growing them, they do use quite a bit of nutrients, especially things like nitrogen. The second thing I would do is make sure it gets abundant light. And the third thing I would do is, as the shoot starts growing, I would go ahead and give it I would prune it so that it branches out. And that's really important with poinsettias. If you want that plant to have branches on it, you need to prune it. You just cut back to another leaf, and then you will actually start getting new branches that come out from there. And one final thing is, if you are growing the poinsettias, when do you start growing the poinsettia?
Well, I know that I'm supposed to do 12 hours of light and 12 hours of dark, and I didn't bother because I barely had any leaves. But like on my old plant, can I like just cut that down? Will it grow back, or is that deadly?
No, I'd have to actually see it to tell. I mean, if it's in good shape, I think you could cut it back, but you're probably better off taking cuttings. But with a poinsettia, you have two different phases of growth. One is reproductive, and that's what we're seeing right now when we have the shorter days and the longer nights. That's when a poinsettia will bloom, and that's reproductive growth. To start a new plant, you don't want it to have short days and long nights. If you want to start a new plant, you want to start it when the days start getting longer. So I would say like in March or April or May, that's a good time to start a new poinsettia plant. And then instead of that poinsettia trying to grow, the red bracts and being reproductive, it'll grow green leaves instead. And that's what you need for good poinsettia growth. So I wouldn't take any cuttings or try to start any poinsettia this time of the year. When the growers start those poinsettias, they're starting them typically in the month of July or August. And the days are still plenty long then, and the plant starts growing those green leaves and the stems and the roots. And that's exactly what you want to grow a good plant.
All good tips. Nancy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Carl in Whitewater, your turn. Hi, Carl.
Hi there. How are you doing today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Oh, sure. I'm having trouble with my hibiscus plant. I think we overwatered it, and the leaves won't come back, and it's taken a long time. And I have a feeling that it might have killed it. But I was wondering if I'm hoping that they'll come back. We did take the plant out of the actual plate, you know, that it sits on, and empty that, and hopefully the roots will, you know, have a chance to dry up a little bit. So I guess my question is there any way that I can, you know, maybe some type of product that I can use to help the roots come back or strengthen them up a little bit?
This is a really great question. And that's a, you know, the to me, with indoor plants, the two biggest topics are light and water. Water is huge. Being able to water a plant and not overwater it. And when you overwater a plant, what ultimately happens is you displace all this air in the soil, and you replace it. You replace the air where those roots are with water. And if there's all water and there's no air, then those roots can't breathe anymore. So I would say the number one cure to your issue is, like you had said, make sure the air can get back into those roots. That's the number one thing. You don't want it to get super dry, but if there is too much moisture down there, let that dissipate over time. The second thing I would say in terms of the roots, there are different products available in garden centers that will talk about things like root stimulation. And those products do help stimulate little feeder roots that can really help a plant out. But I'd say first and foremost is making sure that soil does get a chance to dry out. And if you can, plenty of light will always help, especially a hibiscus. It's a very high light plant.
Yeah. Yep. Good points. Carl, thank you and good luck. Appreciate your call. Keith and Edgar, on to you now. Hi, Keith.
Hello. A couple things. First, a comment. You were asking about low light plants that do well in dim light and so forth. We've had a Christmas this time of year. We've had a Christmas cactus that's been sitting in the north window of our pantry for about 40 years now. And we just give it a cup of water on occasion. And when the cold weather comes and the days get shorter, it blossoms and works real well. Then a question I had was LED, you talked about needing lights. Well, LEDs, I guess, are the new high-efficiency lights. What colors would you recommend? I see some of these have, like, reds and blues. And what would you recommend?
Yeah, that's another good question.
Yeah, excellent question. And just so the audience knows about light, it's a very interesting topic with plants. The type of light that plants use the most, the number one color that they use is actually red light, more than any other color of light. The second most heavily used color by plants is then blue light. And plants also, believe it or not, do use some green light. They reflect a lot of green light, but they also use some green light. When you add red and blue and green all together, you end up getting white light. So if the lights come off as looking kind of a whitish color, that's usually okay, because what that means is it has all the colors available to it. Sometimes people will get lights that look more of a pinkish or purplish color. Those are fine too. They're focused more on the red light and some blue light. It does look different. So when you're looking at the plants, it may not look as appealing to the eye. But the reason why they use those lights that kind of have that pinkish hue to it is they're just getting more bang for their buck. They're just using the light that's being emitted is more of the type that the plant needs the most of. So I would say as long as it has at least red and blue light in it, you're fine. So it would look kind of like a pinkish purple color. And if it just looks totally white, there are a lot of LED grow lights that look white. Those are great as well.
All right. There you go, Keith. Thank you so much. Appreciate your call. And he's right about the Christmas cactus, too. I had one in my office at work, and it didn't get the amount of light it should have gotten. I didn't water it very often, and the darn thing seemed to bloom all the time. It was amazing, an amazing plant. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Talking with Matt Kastelnik today from Ambius. He's a senior horticulturist there. And we have some open lines, so we get you on pretty quickly. You could also email us to ideas@wpr.org. Martha in Menominee will give you a chance. Thanks for calling, Martha. What can we do for you?
Well, I hope you can save my marriage. My husband bought me an orange star plant for Mother's Day. It did well all summer. Beautiful orange blooms. Come fall, I brought it inside, and it started to die. I bought a grow light, you know, a little plant light, like you were just talking about, at the hardware store, and it has just gone crazy. Now, it has one big, huge central spike. I've had to raise the light like 6 times now. It does have these little bulbs in the ground that are growing babies. My question is, should I cut off this big, huge spike that is just going crazy and let all the babies mature? Or should I just focus on the spike and let it grow and hit the ceiling?
Yeah, great question. Do you know what type of plant that is? You said it's a, what was it again?
It's an orange star.
Okay. And do you know what the scientific name is by chance? If not, that's okay.
Oh, gosh, I don't. But, you know, it has beautiful, it's a bulb. It grows in bulbs. And I can tell, I thought I'd killed it. And I brought it indoors just to give it one last chance, and it revived. You know, it just...
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes. So I would say if you want it to last in the long run, if you don't want the bloom, I would take the bloom off. Because if you want it to... Is the goal to have it look really nice right now, or is the goal to have the plant last for a long time?
Well, the blooms are gone. It seems to be in a vegetative state now. And the central spike is like, seems like it's the survivor, but there are 3 or 4 baby bulbs that are growing little, fern type looking growths from which it appears their central spikes will start to grow. I thought if I cut off that central spike, I might get all the babies to grow and I could divide it this spring and put it outside.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to suggest, is just cutting those off. And now you've got new plants, and those new plants will become self-sufficient instead of having to rely on that main plant.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Martha, good luck with that. Let me know how it works out. Maureen in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Maureen.
Hi. I have a mystery question that has been bothering me for years. My husband and I were married in 71 or 70 and 72, and I bought a hanging African violet. I'd never seen them before. It was a lovely plant. We were in Syracuse, New York. It bloomed all the time. It was gorgeous. And then in 2009, I transplanted it with new soil, and it just died. I'm devastated because it meant so much to me, and I have just put it on the back burner, but I thought I'd ask, do you know where I can get another one, and do you think it was because of the soil?
I think there's a good chance when you transplanted it. Plants, it can be very sensitive to transplant, and I think the reason why is there are little roots down in there. The roots that the plants that actually pull water up are usually very small and delicate. And when they get transplanted, it kind of messes that up a little bit. And that can be pretty hard on the plant. So I don't think it was probably the soil. My guess is maybe the roots just didn't adjust quickly enough to their new environment. But as far as getting a new African violet, I don't see them for sale as much as I used to, but is it just an African violet? Is that all it is?
No, it literally hung down and it was huge and it just kept branching down. So it was like a large, you know, when you see outdoor hanging baskets, it really hung down quite lovely and it bloomed all the time.
Oh.
It sounds like kind of a specialty item.
Yeah, it does to me, too. Do you have some old photos of that plant?
I'd have to look on our old photo albums to see if perhaps I got one.
I thought if you had an electronic photo of the plant, you might send it in.
Okay.
And because that might be the wrong name for that plant.
I see.
It might not, because it doesn't remind me of any African violets that I know about.
No, I agree. The leaves had that little fuzz on them, and the flower was African violet-like flower, but you're right. It might be something totally different.
Yeah, if you've got a photo, you could send it to me, and I may not be able to identify it, but I could pass it on to some of our horticulturists here, or pass it on to Matt, too, for that matter. But we could get an identification of it if we had a good close-up photo of it.
Yeah, the closest thing that I can think of is a goldfish plant.
Goldfish plant, huh?
Goldfish plant or lipstick plant. It sounds like maybe one of those two.
So
but neither one of those are easy to get.
Yeah. So, Maureen, you might go online and type in goldfish plant, or you could type in as well lipstick plant, and see if the photos that you're going to get are similar to what you had. How's that sound?
Fine. Thank you.
Yeah. Or send us a photo and we'll see what we can do with it. Matt Kostelnik, our guest today on Garden Talk. Join in at 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Mary in Green Bay, it's your turn.
Oh, hey, thanks. Listen, I wanted to talk about Christmas cactuses. I've got about six of them, and one of them is about 50 years old. It's huge, and they're all in bloom except for one, just in glorious bloom. Every one of them is except for one. And the one that's not in bloom, they're all in the same room, and they get just the right amount of light in that room, I've discovered. But anyway, the one that's not in bloom, I bought about 5 years ago, and when I bought it, it had the most beautiful blooms on it. It was just really full. And after the blooms dropped off, I thought the pot was small, so I transplanted it into a pot that was just a little bit bigger than the one that it was in, and it's never bloomed again.
Yeah, pot issues. Matt, what do you think?
It could be. I think the closest thing that I can think of is just that I don't want to discourage people from up-potting plants, because a lot of times that's needed. But I do know that those little roots in there, you know, sometimes they take to that new soil really well, and sometimes they don't. And maybe it had something to do with that. But I don't know why it wouldn't bloom. Maybe just because it wasn't thriving well enough. It just decided to stay in a vegetative state, perhaps.
Yeah, could probably hang on to it for, you know, if it's still looking healthy, Mary, you might as well hang on to it for another year and see what happens. What the heck? You got four other ones that are blooming. Maybe this one will take a hint and start blooming itself. Thank you so much for that question and call. You can join in, too, again, 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Matt Kostelnik, and you're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Just wanted to mention that next Friday, Santa will be stopping by for his annual visit to the Larry Mueller Show. And this year, I hope your children can phone in and tell Santa what they want. But if they aren't able to phone Santa live during the show, they can leave him a message on our voicemail. Numbers 833-424-3327, or even email at ideas@wpr.org and put Santa in the subject line. You could have your child include their first name, age, and city, and Santa would love to hear about any good deeds they've done this year, why Santa should stop by their house, or any other questions they might have. Get those messages to us by December 22nd, and we will try to read them or play them on the air. And if not, Santa will be sure to get them. If you didn't get all that information down, just go to WPR.org/Larry, and the phone numbers and really all the information is right there on the first page of WPR.org/Larry. And we were really hoping to get some of those phone calls in and emails in that we could then use as part of the show. Lots of kids we hope will be calling live, but we also would like some other ones from children who maybe couldn't be able to do it right on Christmas Eve. We have some more callers on. Frank emailed to ask how much he should be watering his Eve's Needles plant. Any idea?
Well, my general advice on watering plants, the amount depends on the size of the pot and all of that. But when you water a plant, you want the water to go through that pot and just barely start coming out of the drainage holes. And if you have the luxury of pitching that extra water, you know, just throwing it in the sink, then that's great. But you just want to water it so it waters the whole pot. The way I water some of my plants at home is I'll just bring it over the sink and just water it right there. So any of that extra water can just drain out through the bottom. So I hope that answers.
Yeah, that's great. And thanks for that email, Frank. And our African violet guru, Jill Nadeau, tells me that there is St. Paulius African violet, and they are occasionally found in stores. They're not rare, but they are trailing African violet, St. Paulius. So there are some out there. So that's another one to our earlier caller. You might just type in St. Paulius African violets and see if that's not what you have. Chris in Heartland, your turn.
Yeah, hi. I just called in to say that the woman who was asking about the African violet, it could be the Streptocarpella, because she had mentioned a fuzzy leaf.
Oh.
And they have a trailing effect, and it looks like a violet flower. So I thought, well, I just call and let you know.
And what was the name again?
Streptocarpella.
Streptocarpella. Okay.
Yeah. So she might want to Google that in and check it out.
All right. Thank you, Chris. You know, Matt, one of the things about this program is we have a lot of really good gardeners. A lot of master gardeners listen to this program. But also, even if they're not master gardeners, there are a lot of really good gardeners who, if a question comes up we're not sure about, almost invariably somebody will call in with a suggestion. So thank you again. Let's go to Perry in Reedstown. Hi, Perry.
Hi, this is Perry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have two rather large orchids that were given to me as gifts at, 20 years ago, and they used to have 40 or 50 blooms on them. They're the kind of orchids that kind of strap like flowers, leaves, I mean. Mm-hmm. And then they would have multi stems, and they would be all in bloom in the winter. And now, after I transplanted them over 5 years ago, no blooms whatsoever. Any ideas?
Yeah,
that sounds like our call before. The best advice I can give is just to get that plant to start growing, or to continue to grow more and more in the new pot that it's in hopes that eventually it'll start deciding to go into that reproductive growth again to send out those flowers. And also just to make sure that, you know, if you ever need to fertilize it, that you do provide some fertilizer, because that will also provide some nutrients that is needed for that blooming growth.
Yeah, you want to do a little fertilizing there, too. Thank you very much. Good luck. Hang in there. Hang with it. Why not? You got nothing to lose. Karen emailed, she has a small north-facing window and would like to hang a plant in front of it. Any suggestions on a small north-facing window?
Sure. And, there's a lot of plants you can put in a north window. In fact, if you can get near a window at all, you're doing really good, because there's more light in those windows than I think most people think there is. I would say pothos is a good plant for that, and that is a very common hanging basket plant. Also, philodendron cordatum, the heartleaf philodendron, that would do really well in a north window. Those are two that come to mind right away. I would consider one of those two.
Yeah, good tips. Joe in River Falls emailed. He keeps a couple of rosemary plants in pots outdoors during the summer, overwinters them indoors. He's found they can be a little challenging in the winter, and he thinks proper soil moisture and humidity are a constant challenge. He has LED grow lights that he could use to supplement their light during the winter months. Would this likely provide more benefit, or could using lights exacerbate some of the moisture challenge?
Yeah, when the plants get more light, they will use more water. So you may need to water more. For example, if I have plants that are in my south window at home, those plants need to be watered at least twice as often as the plants that aren't in that window. But I would say that the more light you can give them, the better. But be prepared to, you know, need to water them more often. Just check the soil moisture. And a lot of times I'll just pick up my pots and I'll be able to tell how much water they have or don't have. If you'd like to add LED lights, that's only going to help the plant. It's not going to harm anything.
John in Sturgeon Bay emailed. He has a couple of large 40-plus-year-old mother-in-law tongues plants. They totally fill their respective pots. What sort of maintenance should he do with them?
Yeah, great question. If they're totally filled the pots on a Sansevieria, I would divide it up if you can, if you're willing to do that. You may divide it up into two plants. You may divide it up into four. But I think if you do that, it'll give the roots, because the thing about the Sansevieria is the stems are actually below ground. Everything you see above ground is all leaves. The stems are called rhizomes, and they're below ground, and they get very crowded down there. And by dividing those up, it allows the plant more room to grow. So I think you'll get more plants You could maybe give some away to a friend or a relative, but I think that's probably the best thing to do in that situation.
Let's take a call from David in Broadhead. David, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind, David?
Hi, I have a tuberous begonia crop in the summer that are beautiful. Actually, I think they're angel wing, but they end up, when I try to root them over the winter, developing these little nodules, these little white BBs of white that stick to the stem. The roots will come out too, but I'm wondering what they are.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've seen the same thing. I've tried to propagate some Aralia plants, and I will stick them, and it's not an easy plant to propagate, I've learned. I will stick them in water, and they will develop those same things that you're talking about, these little nodules on there. I think that that's callus developing, and it's not a bad thing. In fact, a lot of times before a plant develops roots, growers will often pull out the cuttings, and they will look to see if the cuttings have started to swell up. And what they're looking for is callus, because callus will often form right before roots will form. So I don't think it's a bad thing at all. Sometimes it takes a long time for roots to develop, but I think it's just the precursor to roots.
All right, David, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. Jesse emailed to ask, what is the best food for houseplants? She has a Hoya, also known as a Hindu rope plant, and she also has Christmas cactuses that she wants them to bloom. Also, how do you get a peace lily to bloom? Hers used to bloom, but hasn't in years. So a lot of questions here. Do you want to start with the Hoya?
Sure. And one thing I'll start with is just a misconception about fertilizer being food for the plant. I used to think that it was food for the plant, too. And it's actually not directly food for the plant. The plant actually makes its own food, and it uses fertilizer to make that food, but it also uses light and water. So fertilizer is one of the ingredients that a plant uses to make its own food. As far as Hoyas go, I don't think you have to be very picky about the type of fertilizer you use. You can just use an all-purpose fertilizer that has an even number, so like a 10-10-10 or a 20-20-20, something like that, especially if you're looking to get it to bloom. And then what was the other part of the question?
Christmas cactuses. She also wants to bloom.
Okay. I would still stick probably with an all-purpose fertilizer. I wouldn't go with a lot of times tropical plants that don't bloom, the middle number, which is phosphorus, that number is often lower. But when you want a plant to bloom, you do want that middle number to be just as much, if not more, than the first and the last number.
Yeah, I never really fertilized my Christmas cactus at all. The one that I had, and it seemed like it was always blooming, and I figured it didn't need a whole lot.
Right. I don't think they do. And the number one thing I keep going back to is just adequate light, because the light will promote that plant to grow. And when plants actively grow, eventually they're going to start blooming.
And the third question Jesse had in her email was peace lily, getting that to bloom. Hers used to bloom, but hasn't in years.
Okay, another great question. When they grow those down in Florida, that's where they grow most of these plants, down in the southern part of Florida. If you ever see them growing them, they're all blooming. And just blooming beyond belief. And that's because they're actively growing. So anything that's stopping it from actively growing is what you would want to look at. Typically indoors, more light will help it bloom. And the other reason you had said that it used to bloom, but it isn't anymore, I'm guessing it may be root bound. So if the plant is root bound, you can pull the plant out of its pot and just take a pair of scissors or pruners and just kind of, you can even use your hands, just massage those roots. And if there's lots of roots down there, take some of those roots off to allow new feeder roots to develop.
Yeah, I've done that, and that that has seemed to work. It's sort of a massaging the roots. You get your fingers and your fingernails a little dirty, maybe, but it really can do the job. Oh, man. Jesse, those were all good questions, and I want to thank you very much for sending them to us in your email. Well, our guest today, Matt Kostelnik, is the senior horticulturist at Ambius at Des Plaines, Illinois. Over 20 years of experience in the horticulture industry. Always fun to talk about indoor plants here on Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about indoor plants on the show today with our guest, Matt Kostelnik, senior horticulturist at Ambius in Des Plaines, Illinois, and is known by many as the plant doctor. Matt has over 20 years of combined experience in the horticulture industry and teaching horticulture at the university level. So what indoor plant questions do you have? Do you have a poinsettia maybe that might not make it until the new year? Or maybe an orchid that won't rebloom? I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Open lines get you on pretty quickly here at 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Matt, we haven't talked about pests a whole lot so far. What are some of the pests we're likely to see on plants at this time of the year, and how do you recognize them?
Sure. I would say the most common pests that we get on indoor plants would be spider mites, mealybug, scale, fungus gnats, and whiteflies. Whiteflies tend to be more common on blooming plants like poinsettias. Fortunately, they're not as common on foliage plants. And how do you know if you have them? You know, sometimes it's just like with mites, a lot of times they're very tiny. So a lot of times you'll see the damage that the mites cause. And they kind of make the leaves of the plant paler in color. Sometimes you might even see their webbing. Mealybug, a lot of times you'll actually see mealybug. They're white color, so it sticks out and it contrasts very strongly with the actual leaves of the plant. And also with mealybug and scale, sometimes you'll feel stickiness on the leaves. If you feel a sticky substance or a sticky substance on the floor underneath the plant, there's a good chance you have one of those pests. If it's fungus gnats, you'll probably be annoyed by them. You'll see them flying around. They usually come out of the soil. If you have an iPhone or a computer screen, a lot of times they're attracted to that light, so they'll fly up in that. And white flies, you will see them flying around, especially like if you're coming up and you're watering a poinsettia and little white flies come out, that's what you've got there is white flies.
So limey, my lime tree has had scale, and that is miserable to get rid of. How do you get rid of scale?
Yeah, that's a real hard one. The key to getting rid of scale is understanding scale itself. So when we see scale, we're seeing the adult phase of that pest. And at that stage, it's really kind of too late because scale has a protective coating over it. So if you spray it with something like insecticidal soap, it hits the outer shell of that scale and just kind of bounces off and has no effect on the scale. But there is a younger stage of scale called a crawler. And at that stage, it's actually mobile and it's crawling around. The problem is it's very small and you really can't see it at that stage. So the key to scale is if you're using something like an insecticidal soap, to do multiple treatments, because when you treat it the first time, the eggs of the next generation will hatch and those next crawlers will go crawling out. You want to retreat it again so that you hit that crawler stage, the stage that you can't see. And I think that's the issue. A lot of times people think it's a one and done situation with scale. Usually with scale, it takes three different treatments to actually get rid of it. And it can be very difficult.
It can indeed. Carol in Wausau, your turn. Carol, thanks for calling.
Hi, yes. I have African violets that I'm trying to rebloom. I have three of them. They were lovely with flowers when I got them, probably all of them over a year ago, and they've never bloomed since. I'm wondering if the low moisture in my home, especially in the winter, has something to do with it. Also, we have wood heat, so it goes from being quite cool in the night to very warm during the day.
Hmm. Oh, so there's a big difference in temperature between the nighttime and the daytime?
Yeah.
Okay. That can affect blooming of plants.
Yeah.
They call that dip. The difference in temperature. So that might have an impact on that, and it may just have to wait until we get out of wintertime and there's not as big of a difference in the temperature.
Yeah.
And sometimes it also just takes time, too, for a plant. Like I have an orchid at home, and when it sends up a bloom, is totally, you know, I never know when it's going to do it. There's always kind of a lull in between where it doesn't, and then all of a sudden it does. And what exactly triggers that in the plant to do that? Sometimes it's not known. But I would just give it some more time.
Good luck, Carol. Thank you. Mary in Fifield, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Matt. Hey, I've got a cyclamen that is probably 15 years old, and it has the most beautiful scent, so I'd like to save it. But it might have a cyclamen mite. I've heard something about that. And it has some of the flowers get streaked and some of the leaves are distorted. And I just wondered if there's anything I can do about that.
Yeah, I think the best bet you have with those is using an insecticidal soap, which you can get at a garden center, and doing multiple treatments, because it sounds like you have a mite issue and the distortion. That could be related to the mites, but that could be related to another pest that perhaps we don't even see. I think your best bet with that is an insecticidal soap, and you might also want to keep that plant away from other plants, just so that whatever pest is on that plant or pests on a different plant, so it doesn't get to that cyclamen.
And when you talk about repeated applications, what's the distance, length of time in between?
On insecticidal soaps, it's usually 2 to 3 weeks. That's typically what the time span is. The label will always tell you. Sometimes it'll say it's, you know, 7 to 10 days. But I'd say on average, it's 2 to 3 weeks.
There you go, Mary. Thank you for calling. Lonnie in Green Bay, on to you now. Hi, Lonnie.
Hi there. I have a Dracaena plant. It's probably about 5 years old, and I have two questions. One is, after I repotted it, the stem itself got kind of crooked, so it's leaning, and I don't know if it's because it's trying to get to the light or away from the light, or if that's normal. The other thing is, as it has aged, the leaves have started to fall off of the bottom of the trunk, and now it's just sprouting out the top and looks kind of goofy. And someone at work said you can actually cut that and stick it back in the soil, and then the other one will grow and they will be fuller. But I'm really afraid to do that because I love the plant and I don't really want to cut them in half.
Yeah, that's a great question. On the last one, that is actually how dracaenas are started, exactly as you stated there. They're, you know, most plants that we see every day are not started by seed. They're actually started by cuttings that come from a parent plant. And it does work. It doesn't always work, but you can do that. It's more likely to work if you have, you know, the closer you can get to having greenhouse conditions, the more likely it is that that plant will start to develop new roots and take off as a new plant. But your friend is absolutely right. You can actually do that with those plants. You can also cut off and get new sprouts on it, on a dracaena. But I think it's just a matter of, you know, which one you feel most comfortable with. And if you do propagate it, you know, I wouldn't do it unless I had a south-facing window where I had plenty of light to get that new plant to come along. And also, sometimes people use a rooting hormone, and that'll help that plant develop roots quicker than it otherwise would. As far as it leaning, I'm wondering if it's related to the transplant, or if it is, like you're saying, actually growing just towards the light. If it is just growing towards the light, I would just rotate it and turn it the other way. And that way, hopefully it'll start growing, it'll straighten out and grow back the other direction.
Yeah, all good points. Lori, good luck. Thank you. Sarah in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
What can
I've
we
do? I've got some questions about an indoor hibiscus. I've had it for a little while. We've got it as a table centerpiece for a godson's graduation, and it had been thriving, and I just repotted it. But how do I prevent the leaves from yellowing?
Yeah, and hibiscus will do that. It's a very common thing that'll happen on hibiscus. I'd say that probably the number one cause for the yellow leaves on hibiscus is it getting too dry or too wet. So if you can, when you just stay on top of the watering, make sure that you do water it thoroughly, but also that after you're done watering it, the plant isn't sitting in water in its saucer. So I would say that's number one. Number two, if you can give it good light and fertilize it, those are the best things you can do to avoid getting yellow leaves. And it's going to happen from time to time. I mean, it's inevitable that you're going to get a yellow leaf here or there on a hibiscus plant.
Okay. There you go, Sarah. Thank you, and good luck. Christina in Glenwood City, on to you now. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I've had an amaryllis for at least 3 years. It's when I initially got it, beautiful blooms of red, and now it has never bloomed. I get the green spikes coming up. I'm wondering, does it need to be vernalized, and what kind of care should I be providing, or should I just toss it?
Yeah, great question. It will lose its vibrancy over time, and that's what it sounds like is happening. I'm not sure if it's quite getting the requirements that it needs in order to bloom, but it might just, the simplest answer is it might just be time to get a new one.
Yeah, I think so. Thanks, Christina. Nancy and Madison, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I bought a lemon tree this summer after listening to you, Larry, about your lime tree, and I loved it. It doubled in size. I put it right outside. It doubled in size. And then I gave it some Miracle-Gro, and I know the solution was too strong, but I put it on it, and all the leaves now have turned brown. But I've got many, many flowers on it. So why would they turn brown? Was it too much fertilizer? Can I cut the leaves off? Then it would have almost no leaves.
Yeah, that's a difficult situation. Well, if they turn brown right after you fertilized and you know it was too strong of fertilizer, then my assumption is it was because of that. And one of the reasons why too strong fertilizer is hard on a plant is it makes it hard for the plant to pull up water. Basically, what happens is the fertilizer is in the soil and it kind of traps the water in that soil and says you're not going anywhere. A little bit like, you know, why people don't drink salt water. I guess that's the best comparison I can give to it. As far as a solution for it, I think the best thing you can do is, it's called leaching. It's where people will, it may not be easy with a bigger plant, but what leaching does is you put straight water, you know, the most common way people do it is they'll bring a plant, they'll put it in a bathtub or a sink, and they'll just run water right through it for like 5 minutes, and they'll let all that water drain out. And what it does is those salts that are in that soil will dissolve in the water that's running through it, and they'll pull that water will pull those salts out. I think that's your best bet. As far as what you should do with the brown leaves, I don't know if I would do anything with it. You might just leave them if they fall off.
They'll fall off.
Right, right.
They'll definitely fall off. But that is exactly what I'd do with it, too, is I'd put it in the shower and let it run for 5 minutes or so, and then get it out and get it back up on its in its plate or whatever you've got, and go from there. They do need a fair amount of fertilizer. I mean, limes and lemons are pretty, they need fertilizer, but you don't want to overdo it, for sure. I would fertilize every time I watered with, I use a fish emulsion, which is a low fertilizer, and there are some nice fertilizers directly for citrus plants that you can use as well. But there you go, Nancy. Give it a good drenching, and let's see what happens. Although, you know, you got all those flowers on it. Now you're going to knock off those flowers a lot if you do it that way. So you might want to put it in the sink and try and get the water in there without knocking all the flowers off. I'd probably do it that way.
Yeah. Just let those salts come out.
Jill emailed. She has a number of, emailed. She has a number of aloe vera plants. Some produce a sticky mixture, a moisture on the outside of the spears that seem to reach the floor and whatever else is underneath. The moisture is not as lightweight as water, but it produces a sticky film. Any idea how she might deal with getting rid of this? Aloe vera, I mean, you know, you open up an aloe vera leaf and it's sticky, but it could also be scale. Don't you think?
Yeah, that's what I was. Yeah, I was trying to figure out if it was scale or if it was the plant going through guttation, which is where the plant actually releases some of this sticky substance itself. Yeah, if it is scale, then we would be back at the insecticidal soaps and just treating it like that, because soft scale releases this honeydew substance. And a lot of times you'll notice that before you even notice or even see the scale. Sometimes scale is so small that it's very difficult to see with the naked eye.
And it wouldn't hurt to apply that. If it was something else, it wouldn't hurt to apply that insecticidal soap.
Correct. Yeah, it wouldn't hurt the aloe to apply that. Right.
So I think that's, Jane, that's probably what you ought to be doing, maybe three times over a six-week period or so, and see what happens. Brett emailed that a couple of years ago he grew an avocado from the pit. It grew like crazy. He had it in a large pot. It actually got 5 feet tall in a year and a half. Then suddenly the leaves started just dropping off from the bottom up. They just detached from the main stem until it was a stick. He wants to try again but doesn't want to have the same thing happen. Any ideas? A lot of people have had that happen.
Huh. Yeah, I would just try to piece together what changed. It sounds like something along the line changed. You know, did the plant get moved? Did it get really cold? Did it get really hot? Was there something that just, you know, rubbed that thing the wrong way? And the last thing I would think of is, did it just outgrow its pot? You know, did the roots just get too big down there and couldn't keep growing anymore and just got all bound up?
Yeah, I'm thinking it might be the pot. if he hadn't changed the pot, well, he would have almost had to have changed the pot if it got to be 5 feet tall. In a year and a half, you'd almost have to change the pot. But if he didn't, that was probably the reason why. This time of year, we always think about gifts for the holidays and gifts for gardeners. And when you're thinking about indoor plant gifts, anything that you like to give, Matt?
Sure. I'd always say a pair of pruners is a great gift idea. If it's somebody that already has pruners, but the blades aren't in good shape, maybe it's just some new blades. Trying to think what else. Potting soil is always good to have.
Yeah.
And just a plant itself, you know, is a great gift idea for someone.
You know,
be fertilizing.
Most of us have pruners that are for, you know, kind of built for outdoor plants and stuff. And so those smaller pruners, a pair of small pruners might be a really nice gift for your indoor plants. Do you have a particular type that you like, Matt?
I would say the Felco brand is a very good type of pruners. It's kind of, you know, pruners are one of those, just like most things in life, you know, you get what you pay for. You want a pair that's also comfortable for you, you know, ones that your hands are going to be able to use and not get too tired from. There's also different things that they make for the ergonomics of pruners. I have a friend that has a special type of the inside handle actually moves as she's using them, and that makes it easier for her on her hand. So they do make those nowadays, these different accessories. And also, if you use pruners a lot, you know, they are a sharp device. A holster is always a great idea, you know, just to avoid getting cut. Those are some possible ideas.
Yeah, or cutting a hole in your pants pocket.
Yes, yes.
Which
right.
I have done. Which
yes.
I have done. Oh,
yeah.
My goodness me. And Trina LaSousa says she uses Felco pruners, too, and she likes them a lot. So there we got it from our engineer as well. Well, Matt, this has been a real pleasure talking with you today. And I hope we have a chance to do it again. Thank you so much. Happy holidays to you. And I hope we will get a chance to visit once again. Appreciate it, Matt.
Thanks, Larry. I enjoyed it, too.
Matt Kostelnik is senior horticulturist at Ambius, AMBIUS, Ambius. Over 20 years of experience in the horticulture industry. Ambius located in Des Plaines, Illinois. And he does a nice job. Looking ahead to Monday's show, our physical therapists are back to help you with your PT questions and look at the psychology of pain. That should be interesting as well. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store right through the afternoon and evening on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.